Welcome to JP Morgan's At Any Rate podcast. I'm Meera Chandan, co-head of FX strategy at JP Morgan. And we're going to be talking about quite a few things that need to be unpacked in FX markets. Even though range wall in currencies has continued to be quite low, there's lots to talk about. So these podcasts are good because particularly since the next couple of weeks are going to be quite pivotal. Now, given the range of issues we have to cover, the podcast today is going to be multi-dimensional. First, I'll be joined by Ben Shatil, who is a senior Japan economist and FX strategist, to talk about what's going on with the BOJ, because things seem to be in motion there. For what it's worth, this section is recorded pre-payrolls to cover the Asia time zone. And then after that, I will be joined by Patrick Locke in the US, and we will discuss the payrolls report, other US things to focus on, and implications for the ECB. But that will all be post-payrolls. And of course, we will then magically stitch this podcast together. And so you have it. So let's first start with Japan. Ben, yen has been clearly the worst performing currency this year. It sold off, you know, more than 4% versus the dollar. But you know, we've been pretty much range trading around 150 for the last few weeks. What's really driving that range trade? And I think the other thing also, you know, is what's happened is over the past week we've had quite a few developments that are bringing the BOJ in play for March or April. At least judging from price action and what we're seeing in the news. Can you just recap those developments for the readers, and which one of those developments are actually meaningful?
Hey, thanks, Meera. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to getting magically stitched together later on. Let's see how payrolls look later today. But I think, yeah, starting with the yen, you're absolutely right. We've had this fairly interesting dynamic up until very recently where dollar yen has been in a pretty tight range around the 150 handle. Look, the way we're thinking about that is that to the downside, so in other words, kind of capping yen depreciation, you've got fairly stretched valuations when you look at dollar yen versus where rates differentials might imply dollar yen should be. You've got a fairly large overhang of yen shorts. And I think, you know, there is a sense that the higher up you get on dollar yen above 150, 151, 152, you know, does the market then start to have to worry about intervention from the Ministry of Finance, as was the case a couple of years. So that's kind of the story to the downside. I think to the upside, until very recently, by which I mean this week, you know, we were thinking that yen appreciation was being somewhat limited by the very large retail outflows that we've seen so far this year in Japan. So we've talked a bit about this over previous weeks, but the NISA flows, right, the household capital outflows into particularly US equities running much, you know, much larger than we thought, in US dollars, something like 8 billion so far this year versus about 12 billion for the whole of last year. So a run rate of about three or four times the usual pace. So what does that all mean going forward? And I guess, you know, when we're thinking about catalysts this week, as you said, the BOJ really feels like it's becoming in, you know, becoming a more of an influential driver on the pair. I guess, you know, the focus really is going to be on the meeting on the 19th of March. It looks like expectations are building. We're getting more headlines that the BOJ is considering exiting rates, exiting negative rates, I should say, at this meeting. I think the baseline from us is that this is probably the first meeting where there's a good chance we'll get a clear inflection in the BOJ's policy bias. That doesn't necessarily mean we get a rate hike. Our house view is that that won't happen until the middle of this year. But there are a lot of other things that the BOJ can potentially do. It can tweak the forward guidance. It can tweak its balance sheet policy. It can, you know, exit YCC policy, even if it's still buying JGBs. So I think to some extent, the yen is already moving on that idea. And we've certainly had fairly hawkish commentary over the past week. We've had a strong set of data. I think the risk, though, is that to some extent, the market may be getting ahead of itself. We've had a pretty, you know, rapid move down in dollar yen. And I think the message that we're going to get from the BOJ, you know, in a couple of weeks, regardless of what they do, is going to be one of gradualism. So even if we do get a move that, you know, we're starting to unwind the BOJ's, you know, easing policy, I think the risk is the market potentially is disappointed by the, you know, extent of any hawkish shift. So if we do get a further knee-jerk lower in dollar yen, my concern is that that ends up being somewhat short-lived. And I guess the final point to make is that when I look at the dollar yen, how dollar yen has moved post BOJ over the past year and a half, it has fairly reliably ended up higher, not lower, even when we've had, tweaks to YCC, et cetera. So I think, when we think about where dollar yen is versus what the BOJ may deliver, the risk that we get a bit of an unwind in the move that we've seen this week.
Okay, so it sounds very much like buy the rumor and sell the fact, almost like textbook post BOJ. But I guess we'll have to wait and see what really comes out. But taking a step back, what's really driving the shift in BOJ commentary right now? Because if I go back, say a month or so, or even 3 weeks ago, the idea was that it's too early. We're not going to have enough on wage negotiations. We're getting weak growth data from Japan. So why? Is there a series of events that led to this shift in this discussion of like it should be March and April rather than June?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of two things. So you're absolutely right that that expectations have shifted fairly rapidly. And I think the first driver of that has been a recent recovery in the data, by which I mean really this week. We've suddenly had a set of reports that look a lot stronger than both we and the consensus had expected. So by that I mean corporate spending on CapEx, Tokyo CPI numbers, wage growth hitting 2% across all the headline measures. And then you add to that the initial indications from the Shunto, which were also, on the wires this week. Looks like we're going to see a headline in the region of 6%. I think that's a little bit higher than many were expecting. That probably means base wages up 3-4%, which is from the BOJ's perspective, exactly what they want to see. I think though the other real driver for markets this week has also been a set of fairly hawkish comments that we've had from, board members, in particular, but also a couple of media leaks, if you like, that have suggested that the BOJ is now considering, or at least a couple of board members are considering that March is live for an exit from negative rates. That's probably the first or the clearest indication so far that we've had, that, March is in play. And even if we don't get that delivered in March, it almost looks like either at April or at the June meeting, we will get a move.
Yes, I guess it is a bit tricky because there's a bit of buy the rumor, sell the facts. So one can imagine that yen can stay quite resilient ahead of this meeting, particularly in light of the fact that it seems like investor positioning had gotten quite short. But I guess it's tricky even in a situation where you have the off chance that the BOJ moves in March, the path really isn't straightforward because you have all these U.S. events with payrolls and CPI due for release before. Which is why I've been thinking that underweights and crosses like Swiss yen or euro yen might be better than dollar yen, just given this U.S. resilience story that continues to linger. Is there anything in terms of the outlook for the currency that you want to highlight right now ahead of this meeting, and are any other balance of risks that you want to talk about?
I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that we're entering the March BOJ meeting with a lot of yen short positioning still floating around. So clearly some of that is now getting scaled back given the price action so far this week. But I'm just back to Tokyo after seeing investors in Hong Kong, and I'd say at least in this part of the world, almost universally, macro investors seem to have been positioned either in short yen or long Japanese equities, really trying to take advantage or express the view that we're getting this sustained reflation dynamic in Japan's economy. So I think, when we put the recent move in dollar yen into that context, I do think there's some, argument to be made that some of these shorts can get flushed out. But I think when we think about, as I was saying earlier, the risk that BOJ underdelivers rather than overdelivers, that would be, I think, what I'd be highlighting at this point going into the meeting in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks a lot for joining the podcast today, Ben. So now we are magically stitched. We've traveled ahead in time, and it's now post the payrolls outcome. So let's shift our focus now to the US. We have Patrick Locke on the line, senior FX strategist from New York. So Patrick, this was a highly anticipated number. It was one of the key event risks for the US, and I would say for the FX markets. What do you make of it, and how do you think this is changing the balance of risks around the dollar?
Yeah, thanks, Sarah. So the release itself had a lot of moving parts. I think tactically the response is basically lower yields and a weaker dollar. And I think that can be explained despite a pretty solid headline beat. You did have a kind of a two-tick move higher in the unemployment rate. The month-over-month average hourly earnings number was at 1/10 lower than expected, and you know, pretty soft relative to recent history. And there were also big revisions to the prior month's headline. So on net, I think the market took it as, you know, softer than expected, or perhaps softer, you know, than had been feared. And so again, dollar a little bit weaker on the back of that. But, you know, taking a step back, it's hard to say that there's any kind of like real red flags here, you know, in the U.S. labor market. I mean, we've been seeing some medium-term kind of normalization, but still kind of the run rate, you know, jobs creation in the U.S. is still, you know, meaningfully north of 200,000 over the last few months, even accounting for those revisions. And so it doesn't really give you the sense that kind of the really strong or exceptional kind of pace of growth that we've been seeing out of the U.S. the last few quarters is really ebbing, even if, again, today, at least relative to the consensus, things are a little bit more mixed. So I think kind of, again, big picture, so far as we think about this for the dollar and for this concept of U.S. exceptionalism, I don't think this really materially erodes how we're thinking about that. I think it's kind of just the market adjusting a little bit in terms of kind of tactical expectations and things of that nature. You know, that being said, obviously next week is certainly a big deal as well, perhaps even maybe bigger than today with the release of the U.S.'s February CPI release. Of course, January was extremely hot, and this will be coming about a week ahead of the Fed meeting. So I think a lot riding on that tactic next week. And maybe with that, Mira, thinking about kind of like dollar risks and more broadly, you know, you've been thinking about our economist framework for how, you know, serial correlation between surprises in activity and inflation, how that affects kind of the economic outlook and how we think about that for FX. So where do you land on kind of the combined risks from growth and inflation and thinking about that from the dollar side?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Patrick. I think the if nothing else, the report today, as you said, just really underscores the resilience that we are seeing in the U.S. And I think in that context, some of the work that our economists have done is really quite relevant. You know, they've been making the point, and Bruce Kasman in particular has been making the point that small and correlated surprises in the U.S. on multiple dimensions, whether that's inflation or growth or wages, can really accelerate and really change the policy outcomes around the Fed. And he went through an exercise in a recent note in which, he shows that actually for some fairly minor adjustments in sort of the long run estimates for R-star, for the unemployment rate and for core inflation, for fairly minor estimates, you can actually, get pretty big adjustments in the projected policy rate. So you could have a policy rate as high as 4.8% for the Fed, for some of these minor adjustments. And that's a pretty big sort of outcome, and kind of really illustrates the risks we have in that currency market investors have to sort of grapple with around this low, high for long environment as far as yields go. And, so I think ultimately, we could see a situation in which I agree that the inflation trend next week is going to be quite critical. And if we get a soft inflation number, I can see that we could get a situation in which the dollar weakens, particularly since growth is now starting to lift higher outside the U.S. as well. But But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, over the medium-term horizon, I don't really see many signs of this advantage that the US dollar has in terms of growth and in terms of carry. These are not really fading in a global context. And so I think these attributes will remain. And that's really going to be the sort of the medium term, I'd say, sort of support, source of support for the dollar. So my medium term bias is still on the bullish side, but you know I do see the risk near term, which is partly why you know we've been sort of tactically not particularly sort of massively engaged in this theme.
Yeah, I tend to agree with all that. And on the point of kind of the centrality of the U.S. questions and things like that, you know, we have extended our FX forecast into the first quarter of 2025. You oversee our euro dollar forecast, which is obviously central. How are you thinking about kind of the euro dollar profile from here? Obviously, we had the ECB this week. I mean, do you think the trajectory of your euro dollar one way or the other, is that more of a function of euro specific phenomena, dollar side? You know, where do you come out on the forecasts?
Yeah, I think it's certainly more about the U.S. than it is about and the Fed than it is about the ECB. Look, the ECB was more or less in line with expectations, a non-event for markets. You know, there was a bit of a dovish element to it because the core inflation forecasts over the horizon were a bit softer than had been expected. But equally, you know, April, given Lagarde's commentary, April seems to be out of the picture. June is sort of the earliest we can see for a cut. You know, Lagarde did go to some extent, you know, and as she has done in previous press conferences as well, to distance herself from the Fed and really say ECB is an independently functioning central bank. And, you know, our policy is not really dependent on that for the Fed. You know, and overall, I think it's a good thing that, you know, what we've seen, obviously, and what some of the euro bulls are taking, you know, more confidence from is the fact that that growth has turned up in Europe. But I don't think that's enough to really break us out of this, you know, 105 to 110 range that we've been basically, or 112 range that we've basically been stuck in for months. And I think the reason for that is that the upside is quite capped. I don't think the market is going to be able to price in more cuts for the Fed than for the ECB. So far, it's been a synchronized move. However, I do think that there is a reasonable chance that the market has to price in fewer cuts for the Fed relative to the ECB. And if that were to happen, I think, you know, which is sort of part of my baseline ultimately, is that the U.S. exceptionalism should lead to a wedge between ECB and Fed pricing. That should eventually pull euro-dollar lower. So, look, you know, I think fair value for euro-dollar right now is anywhere between 109 to 112. I do think that the range is going to be between 105 to 110. And our forecasts, however, are going to be on the bearish side of that. So, you know, for the next couple of quarters, I put in a target for 105, and that's, you know, what that's really reflecting is, firstly, this wedge that should open up between the ECB and the Fed. And secondly, you know, going ahead of the elections with the prospect of tariffs. And, you know, we saw this briefly in January when tariff becomes front and center for markets. It starts to lead to a discount in the euro. And last time around, we saw a 2 to 3 cent discount. So we can actually get to 105 pretty quickly, you know, if we have, say, one more cut priced in for the ECB relative to the Fed, that would be worth a couple of cents. And if we had maybe some chance of tariffs being priced in, that would be worth 2 or 3 cents. So move to 105 is actually not that out of the picture. And, you know, to reflect our bearish bias on the euro dollar, we are keeping our targets at 105 for 2Q. I have marked down the recovery that we were looking at later in the year, in the second half, on the idea that US will eventually run out of steam and you know, Eurozone will pick up. I think that recovery, you know, I pushed back a little bit more, just given how US has been quite resilient as well. And, you know, we're still getting growth upgrades in the US, whereas, you know, Europe growth forecasts so far have basically been unchanged. The only bright spot we have is that we've avoided a recession. So that recovery has been pushed back. And, you know, our year-end euro dollar target was basically 113. We've taken that down to 109, which is basically close to current levels. But at the end of the day, you know, one has to stress that given the policy outcomes over that horizon, I think these euro dollar targets can be very binary outcomes given the range of can be very binary just given the range of outcomes you can have on things like policy, U.S. elections, geopolitics, etc. So confidence really is more on the near term and probably more leaning bearish at these levels. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much for joining us. More details in jpmorganmarkets.com. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. 2024 JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on March 8, 2024.